And we will move on to case 4 for this morning, Abisher against Stryker Corporation. Mr. Stevens.
May it please the court. Counsel. My name is David Stevens, and I represent the plaintiff appellant Lenore Abisher in this appeal of the district court's award of summary judgment in a products liability and negligence matter on the basis of the statute of limitations. I will argue that under the discovery rule, Lenore filed suit within 2 years of when she reasonably should have known that her injury was wrongfully caused, or at least it's a question of fact as to whether she did so. I'll ask this court to reverse the judgment of the district court and remand the cause for trial. Standard review here, of course, is de novo because this is a review of summary judgment in the district court.
Well, you know, what concerns me about this is she indicates, as I understand the record, at the time she has the hip replacement, that she was told that it would, that she'd probably at some point in her lifetime need a revision, and that she could expect 10 to 15 years before she would need this additional surgery. And as of, I think it was January 8, 2002, the doctor tells her that the polyethylene is crumbling, that there is wear between the joint and her bone, and things are not moving in a positive direction. Later that year, in December, the doctor is becoming pretty insistent that she's going to need surgery. It seems, reading it, that he is advising her that she really should go ahead with it. She doesn't want to till the school year's over, so of course the surgery happens when it does in June. But given the fact that the statute of limitations doesn't require certainty, it requires somebody to be on inquiry notice. Why is she not on that notice as of January 8, 2002?
Your Honor,
at the latest December 2002.
She was told in December, and rather in January of 2002, of her diagnosis.
Well, but she's also told that this thing that she'd been told was going to last for 10 to 15 years is crumbling inside her body. I mean, it sounds alarming to me anyway, not having had a hip replacement. But when something is coming in at 40% of the low end of the useful life estimate, why isn't that inquiry notice?
Because, Your Honor, she was given various legitimate reasons for that early termination of the hip and the need for replacement. In the Ellis case, Ellis versus Howe Medica, a Northern District of Illinois case in 1999, which is similar to this case, although counsel will argue that it's distinguishable on
facts. It's a district court case, but we will hear you.
Well, the district court stated in that case that even if the plaintiff had reason to know or to suspect that her pain was caused by the system, it does not necessarily follow that the plaintiff had reason to know that the cause was wrongful.
But on your theory, I don't know how she would know it was wrongful until not only after the surgery, but until somebody's gone back and investigated due care into the design of the product and all the rest of it. Knowing that it was wrongful has to mean something other than confidence of final liability.
It does, Your Honor, and we believe that when her surgeon told her on April 24th of 2003 that the wear of her hip replacement, of her artificial hip, was unusual in his clinical experience, and those are the surgeon's exact words,
right,
at that point she was on notice that the cause may have been wrongful.
Why does that tell her that, as opposed to in January the year before, where she can compare 10 years, and I'm taking the low end to be favorable to her, to 4 years, why isn't that already assigned to her, that things are not proceeding as they should have been?
It was a sign that things are not proceeding as they should have been, but her surgeon gave her various alternative reasons that did not include anything that was wrongful on the part of the manufacturer. Her surgeon told her that she might have osteolysis, which is a loosening of the most common cause of which is the wear of the polyethylene or plastic. But he also told her that it can be caused by metal debris, metal wear, and even infection. The wearing of the plastic causing the hip socket to loosen was very rapid and unusual in his experience, which is what he told her on April 24th of 2003. He did not tell her that in January of 2002 or even in December of 2002.
But isn't he predicting all along that something, he uses the word catastrophic earlier than that date, that this is what may be out there. My recollection, actually, it was 15 to 20 years that this should have lasted because she was younger and that she should expect it to have to be replaced under normal, I guess, wear and tear or whatever one wants to call it. But it does seem that she was being put on notice. Maybe it was something she didn't want to hear because nobody, neither the secretary has four joint replacements. So those are not pleasant to go through, and obviously she would have much preferred not to have to do it. But he was warning, it seemed pretty early on, that there's something wrong here and this deterioration is going to be progressive.
He did warn her that there was something wrong. She knew that as of January of 2002. He told her that she would need a hip replacement earlier than he had told her that she could expect to require a hip replacement.
But to pick up on what Judge Mannion just said, looking at the district court's order, it's December 10, 2002, where she sees him again. He advises her to undergo the surgery because the x-ray shows her osteolysis is getting worse. He says he's concerned about these various parts, and he uses the very word Judge Mannion just uses, catastrophic complications.
He used that phrase, catastrophic complications, in the context of attempting to persuade her to have the surgery as soon as possible. And because of her own work time period with having the summers off, she was adamant that she did not want to have the surgery until the summer.
But that doesn't mean she's not on notice that something is seriously awry with this, with the hip, and the hip is now the replacement hip. And so, you know, the reason statutes of limitations last for a period of time, you don't have to sue instantly upon learning about an injury, is precisely to give you the chance to look into some things. She could have sued within 2 years of December 10, 2002, and that even would have been after the June surgery.
It is possible that she could have done so, Your Honor, and it is even possible that she could have been on notice as of December of 2002. However, generally speaking, if the date that she discovered that her injury was wrongfully caused and had the right to sue is a disputed question, it must be resolved by a jury.
I'm not even sure why you think she has such certainty after the surgery that her injury is, quote, wrongfully caused.
Her surgeon told her, Judge,
she
after...
There's been a catastrophic failure of the hip.
Correct.
And that equals wrongful?
Catastrophic failure of the implant, Judge.
The implant, yeah.
And
why does that equal wrongful?
That at least puts her on notice that the reason for the catastrophic failure of the implant may have been wrongful.
Right.
Certainly,
and so that's exactly where I think she may have been in December, though.
And I think the key in what you just said is she may have been. She may have been in December of 2002. She may have been in April of 2003. She may have been in June or July of 2003 as well. Those are fact questions to be determined by a jury. If this court believes that she should have been on notice prior to that time, unless only one conclusion can be drawn from the undisputed facts, could the court make the determination that it made. And for that proposition of law, I cite an Illinois appellate court case from 1984, Aspergren versus Howe Medica, which in turn cites an Illinois Supreme Court case from 1970, Lipsy versus Michael Reese Hospital. This is, at the very least, a question of fact. I maintain that it's not only a question of fact, but that the summary judgment was in error because she wasn't put on notice until April 24th of 2003. But even if this court disagrees with that, unless it's absolutely clear that she was on such notice, it should be a question of fact to be determined by the jury, in which case the district court should be reversed and this case should be remanded for a trial. I'll save the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Connolly.
Thank you, Your Honor. Counsel, may it please the court. The appellant was told on January 8, 2002, that her orthopedic, by her orthopedic doctor, that he was making at that time the diagnosis of osteolysis, which is dead bone. So in other words, as of January of 2002, she was told that the most probable cause of what was happening to her was that the polyethylene was crumbling and was killing her bone.
Well, is that causal link clear? Because, of course, this is a person who, for some reason, has problems with her with her hip, right? You wouldn't have a hip replacement if you didn't. And I wonder whether a diagnosis of osteolysis has to be something that flows from the artificial hip or whether that happens to people for other reasons.
No, this happens as a result of either the plastic degradation, the metal degradation, or possibly because of a infection, but her doctor told her that the most likely cause was the degradation of the polyethylene. Now, this was after a period of just 3.5 years of being pain-free following her surgery. And then in August of 2001, she begins making visits with him, and he says, we're going to watch this. This is what I think might be happening. And in January of 2002, after about 4 visits with her, and after a visit with her chiropractor, where she told her chiropractor that her doctor had concluded that it was loosening, that her hip implant was loosening, by January of 2008, he makes the definitive diagnosis, this is osteolysis. And so at that point, she was on notice. Yes, other things happened to her in the intervening period. In fact, if I heard counsel correctly, he said by December of 2002, she knew or should have known or was on inquiry by that time.
I think what he said is perhaps there was a fact question and a trier of fact might have thought that. I mean, by December 10, 2002, again, I'm just looking at the district court's opinion, page 5, which is at A5, Dr. Benuti advises her, I infer from this very strongly, that she's got to undergo surgery. The osteolysis is getting worse. Talks about catastrophic complications. And I guess what I keep wondering is, at what point is she on enough notice to know that this is a product failure problem and not just, let's say, a useful life of a perfectly good product?
Well,
I'm sure you'll be should you have to defend this, you're bound to say the second. But how is a plaintiff supposed to know the difference? We don't want to clutter up the courts with lots of speculative claims.
Certainly. And as this court noted in its questioning and as the district court noted in its opinion, when you were told you have an expected life of 15 to 20 years, and when you 3.5 years after surgery start experiencing pain and you're told this is what I think it might be, and then 6 months later, on January 2002, you're told, this is what it is, osteolysis, you need surgery, we got to replace this implant. Rather than 15 to 20 years down the road, you're now being given that information just 4 years after surgery.
But she had also been told by the doctor steadily throughout this entire process that the osteolysis could be the result of her young age and her high level of activity and because of the size of her hip socket and so other causes unrelated to product failure. That would set up the jury question that's been referred to.
With all due respect, though, he told her that the most likely cause here was the degradation of the polyethylene. He had warned her, yes, Your Honor is correct, that he had warned her when he put the implant in that you need to be careful because of your age, that you not be too active. But if you take care with this, it should last 15 to 20 years. So that was the point of that, that 15 to 20 years down the road, she may begin experiencing these symptoms. When I took her deposition and I asked her about her activities and all, she said she just lived a fairly routine life, going to and from work and being very careful not to stress this. So in her mind, she knew that she was obeying her doctor's instructions and that the most probable cause is what he told her on January of 2002 was that this is the degradation of the polyethylene leading to osteolysis, dead bone, and loosening of your implant. And the only consequence of that is that something went wrong with your implant. The case law does not require that we know for certainty or that Mrs. Abashir have a lawyer or a physician confirm for her that the product was defective. The case law has a much lower standard, and the standard is being put on inquiry. She was clearly put on inquiry to pursue her legal and medical remedies as of January of 2002. And Illinois law is very generous in that regard, and then it gives a 2-year period from them for her to begin this inquiry and investigation. She failed to do so. And as a result, I think, as the district court found, the facts can only reach one conclusion, and that conclusion is that she waited too long and that her case is barred by the statute of limitations.
After the operation and the, we'll call it, final diagnosis, when did the inquiry begin, you know? I'm just curious of why this delay afterward, when it was more obvious what happened.
You mean after her revision surgery?
We have a 2-year statute of limitations, and for whatever reason, oftentimes people seem to wait until the last minute and file. And I'm just curious, was there an ongoing, maybe you weren't involved, an ongoing investigation of what the problem is?
I was not involved in this. We know that after her surgery in July of 2003, that she told a nurse that she was thinking about talking to a lawyer. So we know that sometime after that, she began her inquiry.
Sometimes a lawyer will go into this inquiry, too, and say, when did you first know about this? That's why I'm just wondering whether you waited the last minute or whose idea that was. But that's beside the point, I guess.
I was on the other side, and so I didn't get any of those communications.
Understandably.
All right. If there are no further questions, I'll stand on my brief for the rest of this.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Stevens, I think you have about a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, Judge Mannion, the date that she made that initial inquiry to an attorney was July 1st of 2003, following the surgery in June of 2003. I believe that's in the record. I'd like to make one point in rebuttal, and that's to clarify a little bit more information about the Aspergren case that I cited earlier. In Aspergren, the plaintiff was told that her hip prosthesis needed replacement in July of 1977. She had surgery in September of 1977, and suit was filed in September of 1979. The circuit court granted summary judgment on the basis of the statute of limitations because she had been told she needed replacement surgery more than 2 years before she filed suit. But the Illinois Appellate Court reversed that summary judgment, stating that while she was told in July, the jury may determine it was not possible for her to know at that time whether the injury might have been wrongfully caused. It found in that case that when the statute of limitations began to run was a genuine, material, and tribal issue of fact which should not have been decided by summary judgment. The same is true in this case, and we ask this Court to reverse the judgment of the District Court. Thank you.
All right. Thanks to both counsel. We will take the case under advisement.